Good evening and welcome to Slammy Gavel, the show that tells it all regarding family court, other court issues, as well as CPS. I am your host, Marianne Petrie. This episode of Slammy Gavel is sponsored by CPS Protect Consulting Services. Child Protective Services cases are among the most frightening experiences any parent can endure. Don't face them alone. With urgent assist by CPS Protect, you get the peace of mind to raise your children as you see fit. With the personalized assistance of their team of expert child welfare consultants, former CPS investigators themselves, right when you need it. Get started absolutely free at cpsprotect.com/register. This is available in all 50 states. Also, please go to the site pleasedoyourjob.com and sign the petition. We need 2,000 more signatures to get a case reopened. That's pleasedoyourjob.com. And I have a return guest on. I'm so happy to have my friend Marissa Kara McGinnis on. She's founder of the hashtag MeToo Family Court. And the last time she was on was season 5, episode 46, where we talked about living the lie based on fraud in family court. So we're going to build on that today and discuss more about this family court corruption. So I welcome you, Marissa. How are you this morning?
Thank you so much. Well, I'm on East Coast time. So basically, I'm fantastic.
Yeah,
I am in California, but I'm on East Coast time.
So you've been keeping busy.
Yes, absolutely. I've been working with a fine young woman out on the East Coast. Her name is Larson Stryker. And we just started some consulting services together. And so I just want to give a huge shout out to her, my wifey, and my partner in crime and collaboration. So I just want to say thank you big time to her. We're going to crack the code. We're cracking the code. We're doing it.
So when you say that, like, what are the consulting services? What does it do?
Well, you know, it's kind of going to be like a person by person basis at this time while we're coming at it from the front end and the back end, and we're meeting everybody in the middle where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a collaboration of sorts. And it's going to be like one family at a time, one situation at a time kind of vibration. It's legal strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I don't know how you could handle it any other way than just one family at a time, because it's so overwhelming.
The corruption, the trauma, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And
so that's why I'm here today, talking to you folks.
That's right, because there's so much, the cases are so convoluted.
That's all part of the strategy. That's all part of the strategy. We're going to be able to look at the patterns that are established. There is a pattern already. We know that once abuse allegations begin, the parent who says that there's abuse that's happening, they get no contact with their child. And then they have to have supervised visits. And I mean, it's really, we're going to be able to break it down, and there are patterns that we've witnessed, and that each and every one of us who have had a relationship with the family court know this, that there's a pattern.
There's
enough of us who know, because there's for every child molester that there is in the world, on average, that molester molests 130 children in his lifetime.
Wow.
So there's more of us than there are of them, you know, and I bring up child molesters just because it's narcissistic personality disorder is, you know, on, it's a spectrum. Child property, all assets, resources, agency, tactic agreements between judges and attorneys. We're going to break it down.
You know, and it's hard to, I would think it would be hard to break down the relationships between the attorneys and the judges.
No, I don't think so. You're going to be able to, like, there's a case that I just heard about this morning, and I don't want to go into depth about it, but this judge specifically is on vacations with the clerk, in like Bermuda, and somebody else is in the same photo in Bermuda, who's also an attorney in another case or something like that. Anyways, we've weaponized artificial intelligence to find the connections. We have one judge that we're looking at specifically right now out of Montana, Judge Deborah Kim Christopher. So we're going to be checking in with you on that at some point in the future.
You see all this, and do you find yourself getting overwhelmed?
Oh yeah. Are you kidding me? Like, you can't help but like be overwhelmed. But my background is really funny. I wanted to be a police officer to prevent child abuse, homicides specifically. And I knew that I would have to look at the bodies of dead children. And I think that there's only a certain amount of people in the world that can actually do that. And I think that those are the types of people that need to do it, they need all of our support to get there. But yeah, we've used a lot of coping skills to get me to where I'm at. And I will be forever grateful for all the advocates that I've interacted with throughout the years. But finding Dr. Mate and learning about binaural beats and music has probably, really enabled me to maintain my focus. And I also believe that my education, and not allowing people to gaslight me, my faith, knowing that just to always stay, just never give up and always stay the course, because it's already done. The Lord, will provide. And yeah. And we're not going to stop until we have justice. We're not going to stop until it's done. It's in the little battles that are going to get us to our goal.
Right, because the little battles, you might not win the war, but there are little battles that do make it just keeps helps with the patterns, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. So I've noticed a lot with victims that I talk to, as well as myself, survivors, whatever you want to call people who have been unfortunately in a domestic, abusive, coercive control, toxic relationship. I've noticed that the ebb and flow of the healing process, like, they will want to kill themselves like one day, and then like the next day they just want to bounce back even harder. It's like a healing process, a balance that ebbs and flows. And it's a war of attrition, and we will match it.
I'm sure you talked to a lot of people going through that as well. And you're probably counseling parents on the phone as
Oh
well.
no, I don't do any counseling at all. I have no degree in this field whatsoever, so I don't do any counseling. But I've become friends with other advocates, and I do plan on doing that in the future. We empower, we educate, we strategize, and we don't give up.
Yeah, we can't give up because it will just keep going and our children will be d more destroyed as well as future generations.
Yeah, we're not stopping till we get our children home.
Now, do you think, foster care also interplays with this stuff?
Oh, yeah. Anything. I mean, it's all connected. It's all connected, and we're holding everybody accountable. If you want to see how the foster care system works, just go watch the trials of Gabriel Fernandez on Netflix, and you'll see exactly how it's all connected. And in the first 10 minutes, if you don't watch anything at all, go fast forward the first episode, fast forward to the first 10 minutes, and there's a man, I think he's the producer, director, and he starts explaining the skeleton of the entire system, all the way down from the Board of Governors down, all the way down to like the fire department, CPS, and all that. And Los Angeles is the largest employer in the United States. So yeah, it's definitely all connected, and the foster care system is in there. Unfortunately, Gabriel Fernandez was a little boy that ended up murdered. The case made it was a precedence. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. It made precedence where the social workers were actually charged and tried for the death of little Gabriel. So if anybody wants to go check that out, they can go look at any of that hashtag for justice for Gabriel Fernandez.
Yeah, that was extremely sad. And the connections were so, the collusion was so bad in that case.
Yeah, well, that case is not different than a lot of other cases, I'm sure, in my opinion, allegedly.
Yeah, I talk to parents. People call me. I don't counsel them. I can just give you my opinion because I'm not a counselor. But it's the same scenario, different city and state.
Right. And you can also see it in the Netflix show called The Program for that's the Camps for Troubled Teens.
Oh, I saw that. Yes.
And we can circle all the way back to reunification camps.
Yeah, because they were also lying to the parents. And taking their money, saying, "Oh, we're going to help your child," and didn't turn out that way.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, children have died. Paris Hilton, she advocates for this very topic.
Yeah, that's that. When I saw that, I just could, I've heard of these things. I've heard of these boot camps for kids. There's no way I would send my kid to that. I don't know. I mean, who knows what they were promising? A lot of parents said, well, they were promising us, you would be fed and looked after and you'd have a bed to sleep on, and none of this was happening.
Yeah, I was actually offered for one of a transporter. And if anybody doesn't know what a transporter is, transporters are these grown men that come in the middle of the night and will yank your child out of their sleeping bed and send them to these reunification camps, where the children end up being there for years. And Larson Stryker, she pulled out a family member, and she's considering it that it was slave labor. And so, yeah. But in any event, it's all connected, and we really need more oversight and accountability.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I just with these boot camps, there is no oversight. And the thing is, what they had pointed out too was when they close one down, they're just opening one up somewhere else.
Is that what happens? I haven't followed them enough. I deal more in like the research, like what's already happened than like I didn't know that they are popping up. I did know that the reunification camps are connected to Synanon, which was the most dangerous cult in American history, and they are connected to IBM, who is connected to Family Court in Sacramento.
Ooh.
So, we're aware that the reunification camps and the troubled teen industry, all of it, it's just all the same. They're using the same methods, and they just rebrand them.
And a lot of these kids coming out of foster care usually, next step is prison. And I don't just can't understand why we are doing this to our children.
Yeah, it's all part of like a cycle. Like I consider it, in my opinion, allegedly. I don't want to get in trouble. I consider Family Court like a narcissistic personality disorder mach making machine.
Oh, yes.
Because you're interrupting the attachment to the parent child, which is a constitutional right, it's a human right. So
It is because these judges, they're way above the law. They're making up the law as they go along in these family courts, right? So no one's
it
following the
seems so. It
right.
seems so. And they haven't really wanted to educate themselves majoritively regarding child abuse, domestic abuse, coercive control, considering the pushback that was done with Pinky's Law. Pinky was a little boy that was murdered by his father after a trip to Disneyland. And Anna, she is an amazing warrior woman in this movement. And yeah, her son Pinky was unfortunately murdered, and now the judges were fighting back to have to get training to get more training on education on domestic abuse. And it's
If they don't have it by now, God
yeah
help us all.
right
Right, because with a lot of
might
these,
be too late anyways.
because I think also that tied in with Caden's and Pinky's Law was that there was a lot of custodial interference. And these judges don't do anything with these parents that withhold the kid from the other parent too. They're just giving a slap on the wrist. I've seen it. I've been in court, and that's what was happening in my situation. So,
Anna was still paying child support while after her son was murdered for like months. The father was in jail already, and she was still paying child support on a child that was dead, that her ex-husband had murdered.
was she in the arrears? Is that why they were doing that?
Now,
Huh. That's terrible. That's sickening. Well, that's that Title 4D. They have to have their money out of somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's where it all has to end as well.
With the money?
Yeah. It's all about the money. It's the kid is just
Well,
a money pawn.
Children need money to live. I think it's more about power and control. I don't, I
Oh.
think money is a symptom, money is a tool. But I think it fundamentally, money is just a symbol of an exchange, between people. I think it's about power and control. I mean, you could get, you could have shells. I mean, look what even monkeys experience prostitution in the wild. It's an exchange. Money's just an exchange. With abusers, there is no other species that abuses the women of their tribes than human beings do. It's awful. And it comes down to power and control. Is it's a, it comes down to abusers, and we have to hold those people accountable.
Well, even I'm like working with a really good dad who would be a great custodial parent, right? But they're using him in the money game, in the patterns, as we have talked about, just because he has a good job. And his child was living with the ex who was living with an 8-count felon. Now, I don't know what these judges are thinking when they hear this stuff, and they also don't look at evidence. They're not looking at, like you said, oversight or even accountability, because I also found this out, that the clerks are looking at the evidence and saying, gee, do we show this to the judge or not? And they may not show it to the judge. So a lot of this maybe may not be the judge's fault. It's probably some clerk or one of their right-hand people not showing the judge the evidence. So what really is going on in there? And that's why I think it should just be abolished.
Yeah, judges are using plausible deniability, and that is the mechanism that we have to use.
Yeah, they're not looking at the evidence. And then how do you make them or even show them? Because I was talking to a mom in New York who has all this evidence of domestic violence and abuse on herself and her kids, and the judge, not we're not hearing that today. That was in the past.
Right. We're
Whoa.
gonna procedural. That's how we bring it to appeals, and we procedure.
Well,
That's how
that's
we're gonna do this.
right. Do you think, it would be helpful to abolish family court, go into civil court, have a six-person jury?
Yes, 100%. I think that that would be amazing. Larson brings it as evidence not considered. Due
Evidence not, yeah.
process and fair trial.
Yeah, it's evidence not considered. And everyone's getting their due process rights trampled on left and right.
Well, I think the family court is an entire institution based on the this is my opinion, based on the 14th Amendment violation of it. Yeah.
Now, people have to, this is like really crazy because I'm sure you weren't, and I know I was not taught about the amendments in grade school or high school.
Well, I was in a mock trial my sophomore year of high school. I went to a very good high school out here in California, and I was an attorney for I defended Nazi prison guards. So I studied at USD law, and I enjoyed it very much, and I considered being. I think that's kind of where I got into wanting to get into law enforcement and profiling and stuff like that. Yeah, no. I knew about the Constitution and the amendments, and I think I knew a little bit more than the average person.
Well, that's good because a lot of us don't, and we're not taught this in school at all, much less in the Vietnam War or our past histories of wars.
Yeah. Well, my parents were older. My dad recently turned 90, and my mom, she recently passed away, but she was almost 78. And so when you have parents that are older and, in that arena, like you learn a lot more. Yeah. Because they
Well,
have more of a life experience. And they're
definitely.
share more with their
And
children.
right, and my parents didn't shield me from the news of Vietnam when it was being,
Well,
filmed, noted.
one of my mom's boyfriends, I think, died in Vietnam. And my father fought in the Korean War, as well as my uncle. My other uncle was a NASA engineer. And my other uncle, he was a vice president for Disney Publishing. And then I had another uncle who was in the 101st Airborne Infantry. He was a paratrooper. So I had a little bit of a different upbringing than I think than your average American. I think that that's what's given me the opportunity to bring me to family court, to the people, for the people. And explore the opportunity of living in a world where we're not oppressed and we can live peacefully and that and just have the right prescription for to spread love without it sounding too corny, but that's what it is.
I know you can't predict the future, but I know how soon can we get this family court gone?
I think that if we declare it a public health crisis, that we can shut it down immediately within 48 hours.
That would be great.
We could put a moratorium on it, but I'm tracking it for 18 months otherwise.
And I'm sure you have a lot of data stacked up, and it's just,
You better believe it. We love them.
and I don't want to keep you all morning, but what do you tell these parents? What advice can we even give them when they're sucked into it? Because some people get sucked into it. Some people cause it and enjoy it. And some people get sucked into it.
Well, the people who get sucked into it and enjoy it, I don't really talk to too much. Like it. You can pretty much gauge very quickly early on if a person is I mean, I'm just talking to other parents to offer them an ear and a shoulder to cry on. And
Finger, yeah.
I don't like I'm not doing this for I don't get paid at
No.
all. So you don't own me. I can walk away at any point, which I've done several times throughout the years, over and over again, if my boundaries are being crossed, or if I sense that the other parent is, weird or
Yeah,
whatever.
yeah.
And I only talk to women, so for the most part, nothing really inappropriate has happened, for the most part. I do have a stalker, and then there's been other things that have happened, but yeah, I mean, I think that we're definitely moving in a positive direction in a whole, I think, as a community of survivors. We have a lot of followers coming on to the Me Too Family Court platform. I think our last numbers were getting up into 5,000, if I remember correctly.
Good.
I don't even know, but we're reaching people, and I'm doing a podcast on Awake Nation called
Okay.
Trauma Triage. I do that every Monday. And then we have the 800 number, 8777 Maslow. Larson has been really great doing her Instagram account, which is Larson underscore Striker, STRIKER. And Yeah, I mean, we're cranking this up. We're setting appointments with other people that want to collaborate. And I work also with the and I volunteer with the National Safe Parents Organization. And so we're just getting started, and hopefully we won't be in this for much longer, this family support crisis that we're experiencing, and it's being labeled as a quote unquote shadow pandemic.
Definitely. And you can be reached at Maslow Mirror on Twitter and on Instagram at Me Too Family Court. You're also on TikTok, Me Too Family Court OG. And I will put all of this in the podcast notes. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, we recently added Facebook. I know
Oh,
that
good.
that's
Okay.
for the old timers, but
Hey, I
we're on
like
there too.
And it is it hashtag Me Too Family Court or just Me Too Family Court?
I think it's just METOO Family Court.
Okay.
It could be hashtag. I have to look that up. I'm so sorry. It's brand new.
Okay, no problem, but I'll put it in the podcast notes too. And I'd like to have you come back on.
I would love that.
Yeah, and keep us updated on how everything's going. So, don't jump off, okay?
All right, sounds good. Thank
Okay,
you.
sure. Slam the Gavel's a podcast. Help the public understand what really goes on in these family courtrooms. I am your host, Marianne Petry, author of Dismantling Family Court Corruption, Why Taking the Kids Was Not Enough, and Cry Out for Justice, Poems of Truth, and Raised by These Wolves, How Family and Federal Courts Are Failing Our Children. You can find me on Spotify, YouTube, Apple iTunes, Anchor FM, iHeartRadio, and other platforms I don't know about. Also, please feel free to buy me a coffee to keep this podcast going, and you'll find that in the podcast notes. I thank you, Marissa McGinnis of hashtag MeToFamilyCourt. Thank you for
So
speaking.
much. Thank you.
You'll be back.
Absolutely.
Yes.